The numbers told the story, they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is a numbers game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Welcome in, everybody. We wrap up the week with a fresh Friday edition of A Numbers Game presented by DraftKings, live from downtown Las Vegas at our Bar Canada at the D Studios. I'm Ben Wilson in for Gil. Kelly Bidlin is here. Kelly, great to be back with you, man.
Hey, it's always great to have you in, Ben.
A nice chipper, Kelly Bidlin. Fresh
always,
haircut.
Man. Come on.
And beard trim for Kelly on this Friday. Big weekend plans, that
it's
must
Friday.
Be.
Yeah, big weekend plans. I'm hanging out with you on Sunday.
You are hanging out with me on Sunday. Live Bet Sunday, the affably named Live Bet Sunday. We have a big show here today. Got to get you set up for a really big weekend, really all over the place as far as the action that we have coming up. We'll talk a lot of NBA playoffs here in just a second, but we'll have our good pal Paul Carr on to talk a huge weekend across the pond in the Premier League. I might have a little soccer action for you, Kelly, to close out the show. A little league, that's how you pronounce it, across the pond as well.
Say
it like that. Yes, I will have Paul coming up. That's at 10:30 Eastern. Lou Finicaro talking some NHL playoffs and a UFC fight night at 11 Eastern as well. And then we'll get some baseball discussion. Adam Burke, our senior MLB analyst, joins us to talk all things baseball, 11:15 Eastern. And Matt Grissom on college baseball. Whenever I'm in, I feel like we are contractually obligated, Kelly, to spend at least one segment talking college baseball. Matt coming up to talk college baseball at 11:30 Eastern. So that is on the
audience I previewed your appearance that way. I said, yes, don't worry. Ben Wilson will be here Friday and we'll be talking college baseball.
Nice. Can't wait to do it with one of our biggest fans at the network and also great contributor, Matt Grissom. We start, though, Kelly, on the NBA, and you just can't help but laugh if you've gotten sucked in again to trying to, you know, bet these exotics, these alts, trying to take advantage of perceived mismatches on paper for the Boston Celtics, yet they've done it again. 13-point favorites last night, completely crapped the bed in every way. A Cleveland Cavaliers team comes into the Garden, a Cleveland team that was in the bottom half of the league, offensive efficiency on the season. And what do? Kelly, they hit 13 threes. Donovan Mitchell looks like the Donovan Mitchell we watched in the early part of the season before injuries bogged him down. And Cleveland wins going away. It's a 1-1 series all of a sudden. Just really, to me, more than anything, begs the question. We should probably be talking more about the Celtics team from a long-term perspective yet. I think because of the odds, you know, the fact they've been this kind of pick 'em to -110 favorite to win the title now since the playoffs started, we just really haven't felt compelled to have the discussion. But last night is now the second time in this postseason where as a double-digit favorite, Boston just has not shown up. And I just wonder when that conversation will actually start, when the odds do not at all indicate that Boston should be in this sort of position. They should be taking care of bad teams, playoff, you know, relevancy speaking, like Miami and Cleveland, but they're not doing it.
Yeah, this is it's going to be fascinating. I mean, I think you're going to hear a lot about the Celtics team today, probably.
Well, now, conveniently today, yes.
On shows across the country, like ours and others and other networks. Yeah, I mean, it's a bad loss. I think the one thing that people are going to overreact to, and look, we've seen this from Boston in years past, right? And this team has turned into, they got the best roster in the NBA. They're so deep. They're so talented. Just incredible amount of good players on this team. But their offense revolves around a high volume number of three-pointers. And that's what it's been this year. That's what it's been in years past. And what does that lead to? It leads to, if you get a bad shooting game, all it takes in the playoffs is one bad shooting game from three and your team to have a great shooting game from three. And I'm not saying that's all this game was last night, but most of it was that. And you get the Cavs going 13 for 28 from three and the Boston Celtics 8 for 35. I believe they made two in the second half of this game. And you shoot like that, and this is going to happen when you don't – the offense isn't – it's not very aggressive to the rim, right? You don't really have those rim attack guys like a Giannis or a LeBron or something like that, you know, on other teams. Tatum and Brown get, in my opinion, get a little lackadaisical, but I think it's also built within the offense for them to do that and end up putting up way too many threes. And if you don't hit them, you're going to have games like this. So, look, I think there's going to be some overreaction today. This team is still, in my opinion, the best team in the NBA that remains. They're seven-game series for a reason, right? And over the course of a seven-game series, I think it's going to be tough for teams to beat them like Miami did last year, just blowing nuclear shooting for four games. I think that's going to be tough for Cleveland to still do, but we've seen it before in the past. I just think over the course of a seven-game series, more often than not, they're still going to win enough games and shoot well enough to win those games.
Specifically within this series where Cleveland is still a 7-1 dog, I don't think we should be getting ahead of ourselves as far as overreaction series-wise, or even if we're talking Eastern Conference, where let's remember on the other side here, you have a Knicks team that is still basically playing six players and is super banged up despite a 2-0 series lead on the other side of that bracket against Indiana. We're an analytics show too. In Boston, analytically, they have been the number one team by a pretty good margin all season in the NBA. That's even considering and baking in the inferior conference that they play in the East. I just more look at some of the things that are hard to quantify, which is just the like their constant inability to kind of play that role of close out, take care of business. And you, when you start adding the label of soft to teams and the way you watch them in tight late game situations, I also then have to look ahead and see what's on the other side here. What's on the western side of the bracket? We have a Minnesota team right now playing the best defensive basketball we've watched in the last decade right now, based on current numbers here. You still have, if Denver's somehow able to get past Minnesota, you have a team like a Denver that has all the pedigree, all the, you know, all the proven veteran leadership, as much as they are in a big hole right now down 2-0 to Minnesota. You have a Dallas team that is just grinding, scratching, clawing its way to wins even when their best players are banged up. And an OKC team that, as we'll talk about in a second, despite the loss last night, still has a lot to like and is a very complete team. The point being, like, let's say it's Minnesota, Boston in the final, Kelly. Minnesota is going to be favored. The question is by how much, and yet the odds are not at all a reflection of that.
Boston, you mean.
I don't think
you know,
Boston
will be favored against the Timberwolves. Boston's going to be favored against any of those teams. I think they'll be favored.
I don't think they should, though.
Okay. I mean, look, I think all four of those teams in the Western Conference can give the Boston Celtics a run. Like, your point is still sound. All four of those teams, no matter who makes it out, is going to be a massive challenge for the Boston Celtics. I think the Celtics will still be favored. I think they'll still be favored.
So, I mean, and they have the home court, so that will play part of it. I would say, if it was me, I would be picking Minnesota. I would be picking Denver. Dallas and OKC, that's a different discussion, but I feel pretty confident in that. And it's why these sportsbooks should be obligated to at all times offer the two-way betting on these futures, which most don't right now. Now, there are some alternative ways you can look at it, like DraftKings offers the round of elimination, which Boston's plus 265. I mean, at the very least, whether we disagree on who would be favored, let's say this is a Minnesota, but the odds would say
to lose
in the championship game. Yes, Boston, you know, they're minus 110 to win it all right now. Let's say we get a Minnesota-Boston final. Like, even if we disagree on who should be favored, that's going to be a very, very tightly lined series. Mm-hmm. And you're telling me right now you can take Boston plus 265 to lose in the championship game. You know, where does that number go? Does that really change based on what happens in this series, since we obviously expect to bounce back for the Celtics? You know, I don't know how much that number really is going to fluctuate at this point. Surely, though, by the time we get to the final and that actual series price is set, Kelly, it's going to be a whole lot tighter, and plus 265 at the very least. If you don't really believe in Boston, like I don't, long term, that's the best way you can play this.
Yeah, no, I don't mind that bet at all, and I think it's going to – it will be interesting to see how the books, I think, react with the odds, because you and I might disagree on that, but one thing that's going to happen is the perception of Boston, if they lose any more games like this, I mean, really from now through to the NBA Finals, every one of those losses is a major hit against their resume. Meanwhile, you've got four teams on the West that I think are all really good, and whoever emerges from those, you're going to think, man, they had to play a bunch of very tough series to get here.
Sure, and I get it. It's very convenient to right now on May the 10th, after you lose the 13-point home favorite, come out and say, all right, well, this is now the time you fade Boston long term. I just think a lot of these feelings have been bubbling up, and we've got a lot more data than just last night, right, to indicate that this is maybe a, you know, it's almost like the, it's, I know it's an apples and oranges comparison, but it's almost like the 100-win baseball team that kind of just coasts late in September, and all of a sudden, whoa, they play a real team in the postseason, and they get a little bit exposed, despite the great numbers, despite all the analytics. You know, like in Boston, you talk about the history here, 14-17 now, their last 31 home playoff games.
That's crazy.
Boston
That's
is crazy. 18-22 against the spread in their last 40 games following a win and a cover, which kind of leads into our thought of they're just not, like, they're not the closer type team you want them to be. Jason Tatum, in his last now three playoff seasons, is 22 of 88 on three-pointers. Think about that. For the highest volume three-point shooting team in the league. What does that say when your star player, the last three postseasons, is hitting it at 25% clip?
It was the tweet I saw today. He's the Jason Tatum's the Michael Jordan of Tobias Harris's.
Oh, yeah, that's great. That's really, really good.
Oh, man.
Now, I'm not saying go out and bet Cleveland 7-1 right now to win the series, because Cleveland is not really any good, but that's really my biggest takeaway after watching them just kind of lollygag and not really give much respect to these teams. Granted, Cleveland played way over their head last night, made a crap ton of threes. That you figure will regress now that this is a 1-1 series. But that's I can't help but think about that on this Boston side here going forward. On the flip side, I mean, what a Luka Doncic performance. We'll dive in a little bit later this hour. Talk about the updated series prices. Probably the most intriguing series price, though, Kelly, now is this Denver, I should say this Dallas and OKC series where Luka back from the dead. I don't know what happened to the knee, but a performance. Just a team performance last night by Dallas was something to behold.
Yeah, I think especially after we heard that report come out yesterday, Howard Beck, I believe, it had it first with just what there was questions from the other Mavs players about it being a little too sticky with Luka when he's out there with the ball and they're happy when he gets off the court. I thought that was bizarre. And you're right. I think we really saw a full team performance last night. I think if anybody really feels that way on the Dallas Mavericks bench, you're in the wrong spot, man. You should have known what you signed up for. And what you signed up for is everything runs through Luka Doncic. And what he's doing right now is amazing. I feel like it's almost not even being talked about enough, Ben, to get that quality of a game out of him. He's dealing with a bum right knee, a bum ankle. His left knee was bleeding all night long for some reason. He face planted into the ground in the first quarter and was messing with his teeth all night. Great performance for me.
We'll talk more about the rest of the NBA slate for tonight, the rest of those intriguing series prices as well. But up next, we'll talk about another note around the NBA when we come back.
A numbers game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Are you ready to become your own sports betting expert? No, look no further than a VSiN Pro subscription, your ticket to insider insights, exclusive data, and winning strategies. For a limited time only, we're offering our annual subscription at an unbeatable price, normally priced at $240. You can now grab your subscription for just $199. Sign up today, and we'll also give you an extra 2 months for free. That is 14 months of VSiN Pro access for less than 50 cents a day when you use promo code ANG. With VSiN Pro, you'll gain instant access to our daily best bets with leaderboard to see who has the best win percentage in ROI. 19 hours of live programming, including expert breakdowns and in-game analysis, proven betting systems from professional handicappers, and our exclusive betting splits to show you where the money and bets are moving for every game. Visit VSiN.com/subscribe today to claim your 14 months of VSiN Pro for only $199 with promo code ANG. That is VSIN.com/subscribe. We open the show on a Friday talking some NBA, and as we are going to break, Kelly Bidlin, we get some breaking news coming down. This was rumored to be happening yesterday once the Phoenix Suns fired head coach Frank Vogel after just a season that Mike Budenholzer was going to be the top target, but Shams Charania of The Athletic and Stadium just now breaking this news here a couple of minutes ago. It is Mike Budenholzer, the Holbrook, Arizona native, for those who did not know, tasked with optimizing Devin Booker, Kevin Durant, Bradley Beal from Shams's tweet, accompanied with a picture of a very forlorn-looking Mike Budenholzer. But
glad they put the Arizona native part.
Yeah, really.
Obviously, this is where he was bound to end up at some point.
Obviously, yes. There was no other outcome here. It is just funny to me the scapegoating nature of the league, and it's like, really, Frank Vogel is really the problem, and now Mike Budenholzer, who he was also scapegoated from what happened in Milwaukee despite winning a title, and there was a lot of negative sentiment around Budenholzer and his lack of fluidity with adjustments and rotations, and yet look, this is the NBA as we know it in 2024, so it's just kind of the reality.
Yeah, this is look, you're a longtime Bucks fan, so I think you could speak to Bud way better than I can. But I always liked him as a coach. He obviously won Coach of the Year in two different locations, Atlanta and Milwaukee. The scapegoat stuff is a thing, though, right? And he was a victim of it. Frank Vogel was definitely a victim of it. I kind of applaud Budenholzer for taking this job, though, because this is today's NBA, and this is. Clearly, this is a head coach who is coming around to that idea and not at least not fighting against it, right, and resisting the change that is happening in the NBA and just accepting this is what it is. And if you want one of these 30 premier jobs on a team that has a chance to win a title, this is probably what you're going to have to live through. So I kind of applaud him for he's very aware of what he's going yep. into, and he's very aware of what happened with Frank Vogel there, and I'm guessing he probably doesn't think it was very fair of him to get fired either. But I you know what, I think it's a good hire by Phoenix. I would hope that they do lean on him a little bit more. And the biggest problem there is I don't know what you do with this roster, because they got so much money tied up in three guys, and we gave it about a year and a half to see how are you going to make this work, and it didn't look good down the stretch here.
No doubt. Maybe the best thing for Phoenix going forward is that the whole new owner syndrome will eventually, you know, the new owner will eventually not be new, so then theoretically, Kelly, he'll stop just spending ogles and ogles of money, Matt Ishbia, but, I mean, for now, that's not really happened yet.
Yeah, I think that guy's just going to keep spending money, man.
Probably. The guy's been very successful. He's got the money to burn. But Mike Budenholzer, in case you missed that, that is official this morning as of about 5 minutes ago from Shams Charania. He is the new Phoenix Suns head coach. We'll dive back into some NBA. We'll talk updated series prices, a doubleheader of games for your Friday night coming up in about 25 minutes. Also have Paul Carr coming up in 10 minutes or so on the Premier League this weekend. But, Kelly, a very big golf weekend that got underway yesterday, and we've been kind of waiting for this for some time here, especially in a non-major. Even in elevated events, it seems like we've had long shots just scattered up across the top of the leaderboard, and yet yesterday the top guys really showed out. Xander Schauffele 7-under at the Wells Fargo at Quail Hollow final event before the PGA Championship next week. You have Colin Morikawa, Rory McIlroy, each T2, three shots back. Really solid start for Justin Thomas as well. 4 back at 3-under. T5, Kelly Bidlin on part of the long shots crew. What was your takeaway, Kelly, from a day one in which a lot of guys at low odds coming in posted really good numbers?
Yeah, impressive. I think you hit on it, especially for those right now, I mean, Xander Schauffele 7-under. You got Colin Morikawa, Alex Noren, Rory McIlroy, all 4-under, four under par heading into round two. Play has not started yet. First tee time coming up here in about an hour. I think biggest takeaway, I mean, well, Hideki Matsuyama, late withdrawal. That was not fun for my betting card. None of my first round action got home. Do have a top 10 on Xander, so I hope he just keeps playing. I mean, he's been the second best player on the PGA Tour this year. I mean, as long as we're not judging guys by wins and losses, right? He's been the second best player on the PGA Tour. No surprise to see him where he's at. Good job on the books. I will say, Ben, because he was definitely a guy I was looking to have a piece of first-round action on, but I could not find a first-round leader bet on him that was shorter than 16-1, so kind of skipped by it, which I didn't, obviously, now, with a three-shot lead. But the bigger thing to me is a little bit what you brought. We got second major next week. You're seeing, I mean, this is one round. Let's see how it goes. There's no cut for this event, so we will be able to get four rounds to look at all these guys. But, you know, guys with questionable seasons so far, right? Morikawa, Rory, Justin Thomas, Jason Day. Definitely Jason Day and Sung Jae-im.
You could throw Max Homa into that category for sure. Today. I thought Homa was perfectly positioned to have a breakout season. Hasn't happened.
And that's been part, I think, what everybody wants to keep driving at, you know, what's wrong with the PGA Tour? Why does Scottie Scheffler keep dominating in it? And why are some of us having tough betting seasons? It's a lot of that. Like, that's always been the explanation a little bit for me, at least here recently, is it's not all Scheffler just dominating. It's trying to figure out where the heck the rest of these guys then fall in the pecking order, because a lot of the top guys on the tour just haven't been consistent. So it will be, I think, this is going to be really interesting. This is obviously a big-time event. This is one of the signature events. If you can get a leaderboard like this come end of Sunday, man, I think as we head into the PGA Championship next week, that event becomes a whole lot more interesting than of what guys you think are really viable to go out there and win it.
Yep, it's massive. Schauffele down to plus 190 now to win the tournament. McIlroy plus 360. Morikawa 10-1 here after round one. Where do you stand on, like, the Twitter outrage over from the betting perspective here, the Matsuyama WD, which happened after noon Eastern? I think this was a lot bigger, like, in the DFS communities, where he was a big part of a lot of people's cards, and there was the individual bets and all that. I think there's been a lot of pushback here on the tour saying, look, you guys are partnering with the leagues now. You should probably at least be giving us some sort of inkling here. But you also understand it's an individual sport, and it's always why, like, tennis is always kind of pushed back against the bigger betting stuff because of how individualized the sport is. And is it really on the PGA Tour to say, well, Hideki's questionable coming into this week? Like, where do you draw that line? It's a really tough thing for me to get behind. I get why people are so upset when you have bets and all of a sudden a guy out of nowhere WDs, but it's also the risk you sign up for.
Yeah. It is fascinating. You're right, because I think it's I think when we talk more of these team sports and the deals with the leagues and just trying to hold people accountable for right. when there's already scheduled injury reports that are supposed to come out, I think that we can get a little bit more angry about of, hey, let's make these more accurate. Let's get these in on time. Let's not let the Lakers list LeBron James and Anthony Davis as questionable every single game, right? I think that stuff, with the individual sports side of it, that's what changes it, right? Like you don't, and it's Hideki. Like, it's Hideki with a back injury. Like, this is something we've seen a lot of over the past few years. So, I mean, I don't really know how you police something like that. I mean, from a betting standpoint, I mean, it's thank God he WD'd before he teed off. I understand with DFS that your lineups are getting locked in.
Yeah.
You're getting, you are getting hosed a little bit if you're playing DFS from that. But I agree with you. I know there's, look, it sucks losing bets. It sucks losing money. However you're doing this with stuff like that, I don't know how the PGA Tour fixes something like that. I mean, I think we've seen plenty of golfers still play well, even with slight injuries going into an event. So if I want the guy to have as much time as possible to decide whether he's ready to go or not.
Sure. No question on that. It's just an interesting discussion point to have mm-hmm. on a league that is now, obviously, because of the partnerships tied to sports betting companies, but also it is still such an individualized sport in that regard. The other individual nugget here that comes out last night, this isn't really like a betting thing here, but Rory McIlroy from one committee, he's a committee guy, Kelly, clearly. He's one committee to the next committee, and now he leaves the, I think a lot of people are clamming for it, like, hey, Rory, focus on your golf, man. Get out of the players committee here within the PGA. So he leaves, only to then announce last night he's joining a new committee that will be representing the PGA Tour in its negotiations with the PIF as they undergo that transition with LIV and PGA whenever that merger ultimately happens. But Rory, he's got to stay in the boardroom somehow.
Yeah, he can.
It's funny to me.
I kind of feel bad for the guy, and I'm not the biggest Rory fan or hater. I'm kind of down the middle when it comes to Rory. But, man, he's really had to kind of – I mean, he was the guy that had to defend the PGA Tour shield forever, then basically had the PGA Tour drive the bus right over him, right, and say, oh, what, nope, we're going to change up to some signature events and strike this deal with the with LIV. And, you know, then he took a break and was like, all right, fine, like, I'm going to focus on some golf. And now he's back involved. And, Ben, like, I think if you're a golf fan, I think he has to be involved. He has to be. And I think guys like Tiger Woods are trusting him a little bit to lead the PGA Tour forward. So it's a lot. Not one person should have to deal with it, but a lot of that responsibility falls on him.
Well, shoots 4-under yesterday, so good on Rory McIlroy. Second round of the Wells Fargo gets underway at 11 Eastern. Paul Carr on the Premier League joins us next.
A Numbers Game on VSiN, the sports betting network.
This segment of A Numbers Game is brought to you by Zyn Nicotine Pouches, America's number one nicotine pouch that requires no timeouts or half times. Zyn is a smoke-free, spit-free, hassle-free nicotine pouch that can be enjoyed anywhere, anytime. It's available in 10 varieties and 2 strengths and delivers up to 1 hour of nicotine satisfaction. Find your Zyn at your local convenience store or online at Zyn.com. That's ZYN.com. Warning, this product contains nicotine. Nicotine is an addictive chemical.
Back on A Numbers Game as we continue a loaded Friday show. We'll dive back into the NBA here in a little bit. Kelly and I will talk about the doubleheader for tonight, some updated NBA series prices. But right now, it's a huge weekend across the pond as we talk some soccer with our pal Paul Carr here on this Friday. He joins us from True Media Sports and the Expected Value Podcast. Paul, excited to jump into this big Premier League slate here with you as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line. First, though, since we last visited, we do have a Champions League final that is now set. Kind of an amazing season for the German teams where you have Bayer Leverkusen haven't even lost a match in all competitions. Dortmund, Bayern both make the semis, and it is Dortmund-Real Madrid here in the Champions League final. What's your first take just on the fact that we get a underperforming Dortmund team who actually makes the final against this rock-solid, really, really good Real team all year?
My first thought was that since you're a Dortmund fan, can you explain to me the dichotomy of this team that has been fifth place and maybe lucky to be there in the league and is now in the Champions League final? Because I can't make any sense of it.
The stat I saw, Paul, I think Dortmund of the teams in the top 5 flight leagues of European soccer are like 65th in expected goals allowed this season. Yeah. Like it's ridiculous. Yeah. They don't play defense. They've got this very like eclectic group of guys who were really good at Dortmund, went elsewhere, struggled like a Jadon Sancho. They're now back. Legend Marco Reus is leaving the club at the end of the season. I have no good explanation for it. It defies all logic. I think there's a reason why the books have Dortmund plus 250 to win the final against Real, right. But they've been able to somehow find a way. They've been able to neutralize these top scorers on the opposing teams all throughout the Champions League run, and they did it again in this tie against Paris Saint-Germain. I'll be curious to see if they can slow down a former Dortmund product like a Jude Bellingham, who's been amazing this year for Real Madrid. I'm kind of pessimistic, but you're right. The fact that Dortmund's even here is nothing short of a miraculous.
Yeah, we've got 3 weeks to think about this final, but it's a very confusing one in the sense that am I going to bet on Real Madrid's devil magic because they just have this Champions League ability to win games and lift trophies that no other club seems to do, or am I going to bet against Dortmund and this nonsensical run that they're on of sorts? So I will say, like, first blush, I kind of like, say, the draw in 90 minutes at plus 310, just because that's a really good price, and Madrid doesn't tend to just blow the doors off people in Champions League. They just kind of get it done one way or the other. So, you know, going to extra time and whatever happens then, who cares, is not a terrible price at plus 310. So I kind of lean that way, just giving the big prices that we're getting.
Yeah, no doubt. Hard to believe. I mean, since 1998, Kelly, Real Madrid has won 8 Champions League titles.
Wow.
Won 8. Yeah.
That's pretty incredible.
In less than 20 years.
6 of the last 11 finals. And this is knockout soccer. This is not like 38 games of the table doesn't lie kind of thing.
Yeah. Okay, on the draw price, I got a question for both of you guys, because this always fascinated me. Do you think that's a price that will end up going down because you're going to get some sharp action bet early on it, or as you lead up to a final like that and recreational money comes into play, I'm guessing nobody wants to go and bet draw over a 90 minutes in a Champions League final, right?
Yeah.
So is that possibly one you wait on and you get a longer price closer to kick, or no?
I would say probably, when you say, Paul, in a matchup like this, yes, because it's more because the odds are a little bit more lopsided. Like oftentimes when you have the really tight matchups, you're going to see more action taken on a match to go to extra time. It would be hard pressed for me to see that happening unless Dortmund just basically parks the bus and is like, hey, we're just going to try to play our vintage counterattacking style, hope to pick one off and win it, you know, 1-0, and just, as Paul said, take care of that that ridiculous devil magic that has been going on the other side.
Yeah, I could see it, the line kind of creeping toward Real Madrid, just because they're Real Madrid and they're by far the better team this season and the, you know, public team, if you will, of sorts. So if anything, I think the draw line might creep up a little bit, but I wouldn't expect a whole lot of movement on it.
Yeah, no doubt. Let's go, Paul, to your bets. Let's go to the Premier League, where we have this fascinating race down to the final couple weekends of the season. Arsenal has the 1-point lead over Man City, but City still has a match in hand. Arsenal at Man U Sunday, 11:30 a.m. Eastern here. And I guess if you wanted to buy low on Man U, this would be the time, because they've just been dreadful. One win in their last 7 in the league, and that was only to Sheffield United, who's dead last in the league, coming off a 4-0 loss at Crystal Palace here on Monday. Any shot here for Man U to play spoiler as Arsenal tries to keep their hopes of a title alive?
I mean, I don't think so. I've been fading United all season, and they've pulled out a lot of games to go against me with, you know, just goals out of nowhere, stoppage time goals, that kind of thing. But it seems like it's all finally starting to catch up with them. I mean, the whole back line is injured. Got to plug in Casemiro, who looks like he's completely cooked in the back line. He's a natural midfielder. They have no midfield, essentially, that's, you know, especially one of, you know, a reasonable age at the end of a season. So I don't think there's much left here. I have a play on this game, and I'm playing both teams to score no at plus 150. Essentially, I think this is an Arsenal win to nil type of bet, but the price is a little lower just in case United has this horseshoe that they pull out of nowhere and maybe holds Arsenal scoreless or miraculously gets a 1-0 win type of thing. So, yeah, if you believe Arsenal a little bit more, you can get a better price on win to nil. But I like both teams to score no at plus 150.
The futures right now have Arsenal. They're plus 225. Man City, your favorites at minus 280. Like we mentioned, still have the game in hand. So basically, Arsenal need Man City to draw one of these final three. Arsenal have to win out and hope they maintain their goal differential advantage of plus 6. At minus 280, is that a fair price to you, Paul, right now? Man City takes on Fulham, who's 13th in the table. Big favorites here tomorrow morning. 6-0-0 their last 6 here in the Premier League. Like, realistically here, minus 280, is that fair or too heavy on Man City right now?
I think it's about right. I mean, really, there's really one semi-tough game left for City, and it's Tuesday at Tottenham. I don't think Tottenham's all that great. I think they've been a little smoke and mirrors this season, but they're still the best team left. It's at home. It's, you know, the closest thing Spurs have to a title game. They kind of have Europe to play for a little bit. So there's something there. That's a game that City would slip up, if anything, because it's hard to see them losing at Fulham, which isn't very good. And West Ham is the final game of the season for City, and I think they're on the beach already. So -280, I think, is about right there.
I think you're right on that. Yes, even in the Premier League, Kelly, we still have the Cancun teams. You know, even if they're still playing,
except they're going to Bermuda.
They're going to Bermuda,
like you,
or they're going to Ibiza or something like that.
Ibiza.
Yes, Kelly.
Hey, get it together, Ben.
Yeah, let's get it together. The other kind of side of this too, we still have relegation yet to be completely decided. Nottingham Forest is 3 points up on Luton Town for the final relegation spot. Nottingham Forest at Chelsea tomorrow afternoon. They look to be in a pretty good position. They're +800 to get relegated, so it's likely going to be Luton, Burnley, and then the already relegated Blades there of Sheffield United. But what are you doing here in this Luton match? You are at West Ham, and Luton in a spot where they are in total desperation. You have to make up those 3 points and a big goal differential in the final two match days.
Yeah, I think between that desperation that Luton has that you mentioned and just the fact that West Ham is kind of done. They don't have a whole lot to play for here. I think this will just be kind of a loose open game. You already have two of the worst teams in the league by just about every defensive metric, from goals conceded on down. They give up a ton of shots on both sides. Since Luton has to win, I imagine they go for it. Obviously that opens them up a little bit on the counter. So I just think there's goals here one way or the other. I have the over 3.5 at +105 in this one.
Nice. How about this number on Luton Town? Both teams to score has cashed 14 of their last 15 matches. I mean, defense optional, Paul, with Luton Town there, fighting for their Premier League life. The one team that's already been relegated mathematically, it's poor Matthew Fitzpatrick, Sheffield United Blades. It's been an awful, awful, dismal season for the Blades in every respect. They are taking on Everton here in your final play on your weekend card, Paul.
I think this is another both teams are kind of done sort of thing. I mean, Everton's been very good defensively on the whole this season, so I don't think we see goals here. I played under 3 at -110. Six of Everton's last seven have had two or fewer goals. On the whole, this season, their games have had the fewest goals all year. Now, Sheffield United's defense is terrible, the worst in the league by far, which is why you can get a decent price on this. But Everton hasn't really shown much interest in attacking either the last few weeks once they kind of got into safety. So they've also hinted maybe they'll rest some starters. That's a little TBD. So if you want to wait for lineups, not the worst idea either. But under 3 goals, -110. So you push on the 3. But you get a better price if it's two or fewer goals.
He is Paul Carr. You give him a follow at Paul Carr, joining us here on the Progressive Guest Line from True Media Sports and the Expected Value Podcast. I'm also pumped for Sunday because it starts our EFL Championship playoff here. One more spot up for grabs in the Premier League. Norwich, Leeds, West Brom, Southampton, some big teams. Who do you like to come out of those four if you have to pick one for that final promotion spot?
Ignoring the odds, I'm rooting for Norwich because, one, they have Josh Sargent, who's an American, plays up top. And two, if they get up, their big rival is Ipswich Town, which finished second in the championship and is already promoted. So if you get those two teams in the league, it's a big East England rivalry. That would be a lot of fun. They're both agricultural areas. They call the rivalry the Old Farm, which is a play on the Scottish rivalry, the Old Firm. So it'd be fun to have both of those teams up there.
No doubt. Kelly, do you know the mascot of Norwich City or the team name?
No.
Come on, Kelly. The Canaries. How do you know?
Canaries. Let's go.
Let's go. Canaries.
Obviously.
Yeah. When you think Norwich City, duh. Paul, great to see you as always, man. Should be a fun weekend across the pond.
You bet, Ben. Have a good one.
Absolutely. We will talk some NBA, something Kelly knows a little bit more about, when we come back here on A Numbers Game.
Numbers told the story they always do.
It's one of those idiots who believe in analytics.
This is A Numbers Game with Gil Alexander on VSiN.
Hour number two of A Numbers Game presented by DraftKings. As we're back from downtown Las Vegas, Spar Canada at the D on a Friday morning. Some patrons starting to fill in. Golf getting underway here in a couple minutes. The tennis out in Rome has been underway for several hours. And we've got a lot to talk about on this hour of the show. Back with our producer, Kelly Bidlin. I'm Ben Wilson. We've got NHL UFC talk coming up right now with our pal Lou Finicaro, longtime VSiN contributor and part of the Bout Business podcast. We'll dive into you some UFC here in a little bit. But, Lou, it's great to see you as always. And as we go out to the Progressive Guest Line, you are a man who is very much diving deep into this NHL postseason card right now. And how about those New York Rangers who, despite being almost doubled in their shots, get it done last night. They take a dominant 3-0 series lead in that Eastern Conference semi against Carolina. They've moved out of the pretty prohibitive favorite here to win the cup at plus 330. You're someone who had invested in the Rangers in the series price here, but how much are you buying in now with what the Rangers continue to do? They've been outscored in 5-on-5s here against Carolina, yet they're up in the series 3-0. It's pretty crazy.
It is crazy, and I first want to thank you guys for having me on. I love talking about the postseason in hockey. And listen, no one more than the networks would like to see the Rangers keep this up, but they are in the more difficult side of the bracket, I think. And let's not overlook what Florida is doing. And so right now, while all the eyes and all the attention is on what the Rangers are doing, and granted, Shesterkin can stand it on his head, and a hot goaltender can do that for you. But, you know, Florida getting through Tampa Bay like they did now, on the Boston-Toronto side, which I thought was maybe a little more favorable than having to compete against either the Rangers or Carolina. I think Florida is the monster in the room in the East, and right now that might be the way I would steer people, not only in series angles, but for the Wales Conference.
And right now, Florida is the second choice because of the position they're at in their series 1-1 right now, going back to Boston there tonight. Florida 2-1 to win the East, Rangers at plus 115. But I am noticing, Lou, in the market for tonight, a lot of movement here toward the road Panthers. It's 1-1 as we go back to Boston. Panthers out to minus 125 consensus, out from minus 120 on the opener. Panthers $1.65 series price favored. How much do you agree with that market movement here in a 1-1 series that's been played pretty tightly so far?
I tend to agree with it for two reasons. Number one, the road teams are 25 and 27, so they're competing with home teams, number one. Number two, I think the seven-day rest for the Panthers was you had to get them in those first two games. The longer this series goes, the fact that Boston had to compete for seven games against Toronto, I think the young legs, the freshness of the Florida legs will come into focus. And I like Florida in this series to, again, this year, find a way to get past Boston. Now, it's not going to be easy, but I do believe they do it.
And again, the odds at this point, minus 165 in a tight series to this point, game three tonight there in Boston. That is one of our two games tonight here, Lou, on this Friday night. We also go to Vancouver. Canucks have just been the, you know, the bright feel-good story of the season, overskated expectations in the regular season, win round one. Here we go again. They're underdogs, big underdogs to Edmonton in the series, but they go out, they win game one in a game where the Canucks were able to find a lot on offense here. So Edmonton now, they're again favored on the road, but not nearly as significantly as they were in game one, down to about minus 125 here on the road. How much are you buying into what Vancouver's been able to do here as they take a 1-0 lead back home tonight?
I have been very guilty of overlooking Vancouver through the last part of the regular season and the early part of the playoffs, but Rick Tocchet has made a fool of me, and I'm done with it now. I think that Edmonton's history in past cup performances or lack thereof is going to make them tight, and you add the fact that Henrique and Draisaitl are dinged up and Skinner played a shaky game, and now you couple Vancouver with young guys believing, and I think you have an opportunity for Vancouver here. I think this series now gets very, very competitive, and the way I'm going to attack this, I'm going to use Florida in series plays, and down here in Phoenix, DraftKings menu is great. We can parlay Florida in the series with Vancouver plus 1.5 games. That's a minus 200. one unit of measure returns 1.40. I'm very high on that kind of approach to both of these series.
I'm very jealous of you, Lou, for that ability. As we mention all the time, it is a 45-minute drive. Kelly's made that drive all the time to go get some action in Arizona. Edmonton minus 140. Truck. Well, yes, of course. Got to go to the food truck. Edmonton minus 140 in that series right now, even though they're down 1-0 with Vancouver coming back there at plus 120. The one other series here, Lou, to talk about that you also are including in some of these series parlays that in certain jurisdictions you are able to do is Colorado-Dallas, which is basically returned now to a pick'em after Dallas shows up last night. They go out, they race out to a 4-0 lead, had to hang on for dear life, but beat Colorado 5-3, and now the Avs are down to minus 120 in the series price, going back to Colorado in a 1-1 series there. Lou, what do you make of what we've seen in the back and forth in that series so far?
I have to admit, I have Dallas futures, and when the series was down, when Dallas was down 0-1, Dallas series was plus 170 just before the game, so we jumped on that. Now the series is 1-1. We're going back to Colorado. I keep looking for the Colorado netminder to show an ability to flail. But he's not. And what's actually happening, it's Ottinger in the Dallas goal that has shown himself to be less than stellar so far these playoffs. Here is another series that I think is very competitive, goes seven games. And again, with this DraftKings menu here, Colorado plus the goal and plus a game and a half, minus 280. And I'm going to use Florida again at that minus 165 just for the series. That's plus 117 on a return. If the menu is going to offer me that kind of opportunity, I'm going to be aggressive and take it. So I'm really building a foundation on Florida in this series and using some plus game and a half, one with Vancouver, one with Colorado.
Yeah, it's a wonderful approach to take, especially if you're in a jurisdiction where you can do that, as our pal Lou Fanicaro has, and Alexander Georgiev, who's been very solid in net for the Avalanche for the most part. The series expected back there tomorrow night. That'll be game three tomorrow, going back to Denver in a 1-1 series. You follow Lou at Gamblu, known for his UFC aficionado type moniker that we all put on you, Lou, with About Business podcast. And while it's a smaller event this week, and we do have a fight night in St. Louis, should be a good crowd there at the Enterprise Center in the Midwest here, and a six fight main card here that I want to start with the main event. Seeing some movement to the dog, not really a shock when you have some of these lower bouts in general, but Derek Lewis seeing the market move against him a touch to Rodrigo Nascimento down to plus 135. How in lockstep are you with the betting market's willingness to take a stab on the dog there in the main event?
Yeah, I like some dogs on this card, Ben. I'm not sure if I like this one. And the reason is, yes, he's a mixed martial artist and can grapple and strike. That said, he was knocked out by Philadelphia policeman Chris Daukaus, who's no longer in the UFC. And he's in there against the black beast, Derek Lewis, who's feeling pretty good for the first time in a few bouts. All Lewis has is an explosive nature and profuse power. And I think that could be a dangerous combination against Nascimento. I tend to, a gun to my head, and I'm not going to bet this fight, a gun to my head, I'm probably going to lean to the beast to find him sometime in during five rounds.
Yeah, Lewis down to minus 160 there, a consensus price in the main event. The co-main, we talk about bettors being interested in dogs, Lou, and you're always a guy, you're preaching, find the value on the underdogs. I don't know about value anymore because Nersulta and Ruzaboev has just been steamed here in the market from plus 145 down to plus 110 against Joaquin Buckley. Lou, what's been the basis for such a massive movement like this of now over 30 cents on Ruzaboev?
Well, Ruzaboev is some 7 inches taller, and though he doesn't have a reach advantage, he'll surely have that leverage advantage. And while Buckley has some wrestling background, he's not a guy that's going to take it to the floor. If Buckley was 2 inches taller, he'd be square. He's just heavily muscled. And Ruzaboev is going to have to get this fight, manage this fight into the second round to allow Buckley to swell up a little bit and slow down. He surely doesn't want to stand toe-to-toe with him early in this fight. Ruzibov, the well more versed, well-rounded mixed martial artist, is going to need to get him to the floor. Now, the one thing I'll say for those that like Buckley is Ruzibov is a 185-pound fighter. He's cut to 170 for this fight, and most of his losses have come at 170. Now, I'm on the Ruzibov side early in the week, and so we got a little better price than what we're seeing now. But I look for this to be a very competitive fight, but Ruzibov must use IQ and take this fight into the second round or better in order to gain advantage.
Lou Finicaro joining us on our progressive guest line right now. You mentioned you do like some dogs. Lou, what's another dog that you do like looking further down this card here for UFC Fight Night this weekend in St. Louis?
At the featherweight division, Sean Woodson, a St. Louis native, a long, tall, skinny guy, but he's a great kickboxer and needs distance to manage his advantage. And he's in against a guy in Alex Caceres that has great experience, has fought the who's who of couple of different divisions now. And Caceres simply is a dog. He trains here at Phoenix's MMA lab. The Caceres formula will be to attack those pencil legs of Woodson with leg kicks and push him back and force him to expend energy. It took an hour for Woodson to weigh in this morning, so he cut some weight. I don't think he had any real trouble, but for an hour, Caceres was drinking orange juice and eating bananas. And I look for Caceres to try and bully Woodson. Caceres plus 180 currently.
That's available at multiple books around the market as well. Follow Lou at Gamblue. Check out the Bout Business podcast as well. Always great to catch up with you, Lou. It's a pleasure. Be well.
Thanks so much, guys. Good luck to everybody.
No question. We will continue our great list of guests on this Friday. Let me come back because Adam Burke joins to talk some Major League Baseball when we return to A Numbers Game.